You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 21 November, we get UK retail sales data this afternoon, expected zero growth. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, it's Skull Globe, PSG, Old Oak. We have results. Lewis, Mr. Price, Roy Nert. We'll touch on all of those. We're chatting with PPS Investments, managing our emotional market response with a process rather than just randomness. And thoughts from me, NVIDIA, the AI bubble, how bad is it? And how do we know when the bubble has popped? Head of macro at Citi has an idea. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, the biggest risk for SolC as the JS listing nears. Listing marks commemoration of a complex turnaround and restructuring by Blue Label. Business Day, S&P boosts rating for big banks and insurers, upgrades ratings for all our banks and insurers, reflecting improved credit worthiness and, of course, the sovereign rating. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 1.6% and NASDAQ down 2.4%, that after they both opened very green. East mostly red, Sydney the exception, up 0.2%. We got Tokyo and Hong Kong just over 2% lower and Tencent 1.8% down. Commodities are red, gold futures 4,066, Brent 62.63, platinum 1,513, palladium 1,396. The rand is 17.24, Bitcoin 85,500. Top 40 opening call at red open, 1,550 points or 1.5% down.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Skulk Lowe, PSG Old Oak. Skulk, always appreciate the early morning. Results coming galore. Let's start with some retailers. Mr. Price, the numbers weren't, you know, massive, but I suppose it's all relative to trading conditions, to expectations. They do have 3 billion rand cash on the balance sheet, and the market liked them. Notwithstanding, they said that H2 was going to be a little bit tougher. Your thoughts?
Good morning, Simon, and good morning to all the listeners. Yeah, all appropriate. We're finding ourselves on Black Friday talking about retailers. So, yeah, I must say, let's start with it sounds like a Chinese dish I'm making, sweet and sour. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's start with the sour. I mean, as we sit here, even after yesterday's massive movement in Mr. Price, I mean, the share price still finds itself in the top 15 worst performers on the JSE for this year. After yesterday's move, I mean, it's still down over 23%. So it came off very, very, let's call it highs in 2024. We know we had that two-pot system. Everybody was just frantic and saying there's going to be billions flowing to these retailers, which now just showed that maybe we were a little bit over-optimistic in 2024. Now, fast forward that you want 1 year later, I think we're sort of seeing an inverse now. I mean, we've seen these results. It was stable. I mean, I you know, revenue up 5.4%. You know, retail sales up 5.5%. I mean, they've been managing to increase the margins, which is very positive. It just shows you this is a company that in this, you mentioned it in the intro, in a very tough environment, being able to, they've really, really managed this company very, very well. Clearly showing some solid cost controls and, just hitting the mark. So, yeah, it's also been a positive. This is where the sweet comes in. It's been a positive environment for these retailers. And this is why I'm quite surprised to see that the market's down. Because, yes, as we sit here with struggling economy, we did see interest rates come down yesterday, another quarter of a percentage. Mm-hmm. We've seen the rand improve quite a bit in 2025. And to the listeners out there, just note that a stronger rand is very, very good for a company like Mr. Price. I mean, it's the import cost is clearly import of the goods are cheaper. They're the underlying physical commodities, polyester and those kind of things. They were a little bit cheaper. So they've been in an environment where I thought was good. And I like it. I mean, I've told you 2 weeks ago we had this conversation on another forum. I actually like Mr. Price at current levels, and I still think there's some upside.
I mean, forward PE under 15, dividend
Exactly.
yield above 4, and there's a lot to like here. What about Lewis, who's basically a bank masquerading as a furniture retailer? But you know what? They do it with respect to them. Man, they do it well. And they are, I mean, if you think Mr. Price is cheap, then I've got a Lewis for you.
I mean, it's just a same story, different product. I mean, we've seen a similar environment. Also, I mean, very similar to Mr. Price. I mean, Mr. Price being able to open, 91 new stores in 2025, clearly showing that they're still optimistic. And when you look at Lewis, same story. They've also opened, I think, sort of something like 30 new stores, being able to increase their profit margin. And not just increase it, really nicely increasing their profit margins. And like I said, very, very similar story. Very similar story to Mr. Price. Lower interest rate environment is clearly good. The credit sales were up, so that means it's just a little bit more stable. And I must say I like it. Not an investor in Lewis, but clearly they've gone from strength to strength.
Yeah, every time I look at Lewis, I think I should be an investor. But with you, unfortunately, I'm watching from the sidelines. And then let's turn industrial. Reunert, which is, I mean, this is a company that's been like around for like 100-odd years. They do a whole bunch. Some of it's defense, some of it's transmission cables. Some of it is they're selling into the US, which is actually doing very well. A tough space, but I thought not a bad set of numbers.
No, it's also another company. I mean, another company that's been struggling in 2025, revenue remained fairly stable. Let's start with the solars. I mean, the market sort of expected them to struggle a bit this year, but when you look at the consensus, they were expecting around about, let's call it, 6 rand 33. It came out 6 rand 49, so that was a beat. And I think you mentioned the sales in the US, definitely some demand from the circuit
That was what
breaker
I was looking
side.
for. Yeah.
You were working looking for that word. Your circuit breaker fried there. Yeah, so they definitely got some solid demand from circuit breakers from the US, not really from South African point of view. But again, it's industrials has been struggling this year. When you look at all our industrials, from different, really been underperforming and lagging the international counterparts. And when I saw this type of results, I thought, this could just be something that could see the tide sort of turn. Solid cash flow. I mean, they had about free cash flow, about 1.2 billion. Again, very much in line with the history. Also sitting with a bit of cash, and also managing to increase the dividend by 6%. So, yeah, all three of these companies brought out results and really saw themselves on the top of the pops yesterday from best performing stocks on the JSE. So clearly, Mr. Market like all three of them.
Yeah, they did, and all three were good. To be clear, tough out there, but they're all doing really well. We leave it there. Skullclaw, PSG, Old Oak, and our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Mr. Price and Lewis, what did you think of those numbers? I'm a skulk. Knock it out the park? No. Strong, solid numbers? Yeah. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Mark Phillips, Head of Portfolio Management and Analytics at PPS Investments. Mark, appreciate the time. Markets, I mean, they're ever changing. There's always something changing the sentiment, the mood, the direction. But perhaps the biggest force in markets is actually our behavior and how we respond to it.
Behavior obviously has quite a huge impact on investment outcomes. Market movements matter. But what investors do often matter even more. Overconfidence can lead people to buy at the wrong time, while fear and anxiety can make them sell too early. You've got other things like herd behavior and the fear of missing out that could even push investors to follow the crowd instead of sort of sticking to their own plan. recognizing these tendencies and, you know, managing them is essential for long-term success and avoiding mistakes that can ultimately erode wealth.
It is that. I mean, markets are complex. We are complex. And there's lots of biases that are going to impact us, psychological biases, in a recent note, even cultural market conditions. The goal isn't to remove our emotion. It's to manage that emotion.
That's correct. There are several common behaviors that can, you know, undermine results. I think you've really got to understand which investor behaviors, you know, tend to sabotage returns the most. Mm-hmm. You know, the first being overconfidence, which really sort of encourages taking unnecessary risks. There's another one called loss aversion that can lead to selling, you know, during market dips. We've also got anchoring and decency bias that make investors focus too much on past events or the latest headlines instead of focusing on the bigger picture. Even decisions about portfolio concentration or trading frequency can be affected by these biases. So investors are not aware of these patterns. You know, they can quietly erode long-term performance.
And part of the way to really resolve this, because as I said, I mean, we're not going to get rid of these cognitive biases. We're not going to get rid of emotions. We are human. But it's around creating process for the investment process itself.
That's correct. You know, a discipline really provides structure in an environment that is constantly changing. It ensures that investment decisions are based on the long-term goals rather than short-term emotions. Mm-hmm. A disciplined process allows for, you know, thoughtful planning around asset allocation, potential tactical adjustments, and diversification. And really, by following a structured approach, investors can respond to market changes without impulsive decisions, which improves the chances of achieving consistent returns over time. If I can also add, you know, emotional intelligence too, you know, helps investors manage the psychological pressures that come with market volatility. By understanding sort of your own reactions and staying aware of, you know, the behavioral biases we've just mentioned, can also prevent costly mistakes. It allows you to make decisions in line with, you know, your long-term strategy rather than, you know, the short-term fear or excitement. And in practice, you know, this means remaining patient, you know, sticking to your investment plan, and using emotions in a way that supports rather than undermines, you know, your portfolio.
It's actually a great point. And it is, I mean, part of that process is also about, you know, and I know that markets, we can get a lot into forecasts and we're trying to forecast absolutely everything, short term, medium term, and long term. It's actually less about those single forecasts. If we build that resilient portfolio, the forecasts sort of almost fade away. You still need to have understandings of trends and sectors, but they kind of fall away in terms of, well, inflation will be 3 point whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when managed properly, behavior can support growth and resilience. You know, being aware of biases allows investors to make more rational choices. Mm-hmm. You know, there's various techniques that you could, you know, do to really support this. You've got scenario thinking and planning for different market conditions, you know, that can create opportunities. As I mentioned before, maintaining a long-term perspective and allowing for compounding to work its effect is also, you know, a behavioral advantage. And ultimately, you know, resilience comes through thoughtful design and active management. You know, for us, asset allocation ensures the portfolio is balanced, you know, across the asset classes, equities, bonds, cash, and defensive assets to really withstand different market conditions. Diversification through, you know, different investment styles and managers reduces a reliance on any one single perspective. And then, you know, with our process, we, you know, continuously monitoring, we've got structured reviews, and we've got a good managed selection process that really supports disciplined decision-making. And together, these elements create a portfolio ecosystem that, you know, can adapt and thrive no matter what market conditions arise.
I want to touch on asset allocation and managers in a moment, but you mentioned scenario planning there, and that really struck me as kind of having a plan for when something happens so that when it happens, you know how to respond rather than sort of panicking and running around unknowing what to do.
Yeah, that's correct. I think the ability is not so much about, you know, getting the pinpoint, you know, correct, but it's really being able to sort of understand what potentially could happen. And I think going through the exercise of being able to see different futures or different outcomes, you're able to sense check your portfolio, you know, at a point in time, you know, if something does happen, you know, how does the portfolio behave? Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, it's not so much about, you know, getting it right, but I think it's sort of when things do go wrong, just make sure that you've planned enough that it doesn't go horribly wrong.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. So it doesn't go horribly wrong. Asset allocation, you mentioned that, hugely important. And I mean, you know, with space for sort of tactical adjustments as circumstances are changing. But this, in many senses, folks will tell me that the asset allocation kind of sits at the heart of a well-constructed portfolio.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, I think when you think about sort of the tactical asset allocation decision, you can really compare sort of the market cycles to seasons. You know, markets generally do move in cycles, just like the seasons. I mean, there are periods of growth, like spring. You know, times of abundance like summer, you know, there's transitional periods like autumn and, you know, slower, more cautious phases like winter. You know, we cannot control when these seasons start to end, but we can really prepare for them. And really understanding these cycles and, you know, how they impact various asset classes, you know, from an asset allocation decision can help investors make better decisions rather than reacting, you know, impulsively. It's really about anticipating what is likely to happen and, yep. and therefore, you know, responding thoughtfully rather than emotionally.
And then in the case of manager sort of allocation and selecting managers to fit into that asset allocation, that then becomes the next big step, which is, you know, manager selection. And it's not just, you know, it's too easy to go look at the last quarter or year's return. It's their ability to consistently generate that return within the allocation that you're looking for.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, I think, you know, at PPS Investments, you know, we're quite thoughtful around how we go about manager selection. We allocate to both specialist managers in the first instance, which focus on specific asset classes, be it equities, bonds, property, or cash. And, you know, on the other side, we've also got, you know, multi-asset managers that, you know, have a broad stroke of exposure to different asset classes locally and offshore. And, you know, for us, it's at a portfolio construction decision, you know, bringing them together in a specific way that helps you sort of maximize the likelihood of achieving a certain investment objective.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it is that sort of that construction, those building blocks in a sense. We'll leave it there. Mark Phillips, Head of Portfolio Management Analytics, PPS Investments. Appreciate the time. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Some thoughts for me on AI bubbles, NVIDIA. We chatted with Kieran Witten from Anchor after the NVIDIA results after market close. And there was a sort of a feeling as we were coming up to it, even from last week, that a lot hinged on those results. And they were good. Absolutely, they were good. The numbers beat expectations. The forward outlooks were better than expected. Upgrade outlooks. Everything about it was lovely. NVIDIA was trading 3% on the day and then 5% in pre-market. Thursday evening, it opened all looking good and then closed red. Which is not a good sign. It does say that, well, it wasn't enough. And I don't think there's anything more NVIDIA could have done. So then we get to the question, are we in a bubble? And more importantly, when does it pop? I was listening to a great podcast earlier in the week, Odd Lots. Dirk Weiler, he is Citigroup's head of global macro. And he was talking around bubbles in particular. And he's been around a long time. He remembers the dot-com bubble. He was there. And the first point is, what are the stocks that are driving the bubble? And in this particular case, it's the Magnificent Seven. That's nice and easy. Alphabet, Tesla, Nvidia, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, and Meta. Those are those bubble stocks. And per his research, the market hit bubble territory, or those stocks, in May. What he does, how does he determine that? Two standard deviations of the price above prior year. Fairly simple, fairly sort of standard. And he says, yep, in bubble. And he also says, importantly, is when you notice, when the bubble's confirmed, the best move, buy it. You want to buy it because, well, you know what? The thing with bubbles is they go higher. The problem then gets is when to exit. When is the bubble actually popping? So he's got another formula for that. And he says, you know what? Put a 200-day moving average onto the stocks. There are seven of them. And when two of those stocks break below the 200-day moving average, well, then your bubble is popping. So how are they doing? Well, Meta Platforms is the only one at this point that is below the 200-day moving average. But it does mean that we have at least one and we only need two. Meta's down almost 15% below the 200. But we have two stocks that are really, really close. Amazon's trading just over 1% above its 200-day and Microsoft just 2.5% above the 200-day moving average. So if we get a strong sell down in either of those tonight or in the next couple of days, as per this thinking, the bubble is popping. That's it for today. We were chatting with Tertia Jacobs yesterday from Investec. We were talking about an MPC rate decision that was due yesterday afternoon. Consensus was for a 0.25% rate cut, a quarter of a percent. We asked you if you thought Saab will cut. 40% said yes, absolutely. You were spot on the money. Saab did cut. A third said no, they are grumpy. The rest said we actually need 0.5%. You know what? We do need 0.5%, but we'll take the 0.25% because it's also true. They are grumpy at the same time. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday. If you worked in the UK, you might be owed a pension.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.